Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and today my guest is Sam Lipsight. Sam and I have spoken about several of his other books, although it's been a while. We didn't talk about his book of short stories, which was called The Fun Parts, so I'm particularly eager to talk to him about his new novel, Hark, which is published by Simon & Schuster. Hark is the name of a character in the book. His mother particularly liked the song Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and she thought the song was being sung to someone named Hark, and so she named her son Hark.
That's right.
His father knew better, but was just amused. There's a certain kind of patriarchal attitude that is amused by the arrant stupidity of what goes on in the household. Sure, name him Hark. This is an odd book about a man named Hark who probably can hear the herald angels sing. And what no one has said in reviewing this book is that this book is asking what it would be like for there to be a religious/spiritual book if there could be one. All of the characters, not just some of them, are unworthy of this aspiration, but they nevertheless need it. They're living in our times, which is to say, troubled times. We need herald angels, and we need Hark, who is selling pamphlets. He has an ongoing line. What's his watch cry?
I have pamphlets for sale, yeah.
I love this. And his pamphlets are about what he calls mental
archery.
Yeah. Like Tai Chi or like yoga, it's a different set of positions in which, with which, through which to clear the mind.
Yes. Techniques for focus.
Techniques for focus. As soon as anyone hears Hark speaking, lecturing, they make up something that his theories are about, and they call it POF,
yeah.
Power of Focus.
Which he never actually says.
Which he never says. But eventually, things he hears people say,
he starts saying, yes.
So
there's a nice feedback loop there.
Within the joke of a nightmare culture, there's the joke of a spiritual solution. And he is seeking watch cries, mottos that will be correct, and so he'll adapt others that people use, and people hear him, and he hears people, and the whole thing becomes a feedback loop. And it's a very funny book and a very sad book, and the skill of the book is that it doesn't tip its hand about when it's being funny and when it's being sad. Now, tell me, Sam, for some reason, more than ever before with any of your books, people writing about this one seem to insist that they know that this book means to be sincere, and others say they know it means to be funny. There's a greater...
I have noticed that, yes.
...of disagreement about the tone of the book. What do you think? What's going on?
Well, I have to consider that a form of success. If one is always pleased when there are such various readings, and I think that you're right. I try to, I guess I'm riding a line the whole time in the book between those two polarities. And I get a kick out of it.
There have been books of yours in which complete losers are making cold calls for funding for an institution of right. one kind or another, and the absolute hopelessness of this kind of job. But it's very possible that Hark was kissed by an angel before he came here. He speaks, he's very articulate, and he's very attractive. There is a character within the book saying, you can't be charismatic unless you're attractive.
Yeah.
It's a requirement. What's fascinating to me is that the funniest things in the book are left out by the reviewers who think the book is sincere, and the sincerest things in the book are being left out by the critics who think the book is funny.
Well, I think that, like, I mean, Hark as a character is kind of a cipher in a way, and the other characters are projecting a lot of their fear and desire, their yearnings onto him. And I think maybe that's happening with the book as well, that people are, you know, reading the book they want to read, in a sense, or the book they feel most comfortable with. But the book is the kind of thing that if you just hold it at a slightly different angle, maybe it gives a different experience.
Well, what I thought was perhaps that we're in such a strange time that those people who know that climate change is a scientifically verifiable effect on our future feel that way, and then those who feel, oh, no, there is no scientific proof. We've never been in a time where opposition has been so strong. Even our chief executive, who seems obviously, to put it mildly, slipping up on some issues. We may not agree about which ones they are. Some of them would say all, some of us would say none. But this book, Hark, is, I think, a novel of our time, which is the best thing a new novel can be, because it is presenting ambiguity as a constant feature of modern life.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think if we look at our president and our first thought is he kidding? Is he kidding or not? Is he serious? And I think that that problem, that paradox, is filtered out into everything that we think about and do right now.
There's a character in this book who has come to the conclusion that people with money are fundamentally different.
Yes.
From people who don't have money. And the people who don't have money, chances are, will never have it. It's not biologically possible.
Yeah, well, he thinks that we've reached this new stage where through breeding and science and various technologies that rich people are actually a separate caste at this point. A separate species, almost.
Now, this is, of course, horrifying
yeah.
to read in a novel.
And so there's that character has that theory, and then another person has the theory you mentioned before about attractiveness and one's ability to negotiate in the world being hinged to one's looks. But so I think a lot of these characters, they all are – that's part of the problem of this moment, too, is because everyone is playing so fast and loose with the facts that – we have all of these theories. We have conspiracy theories. We have theories of society. And everybody kind of latches on to one crazy idea after another. And that this book kind of brings these together.
I'm so happy to be talking to Sam Lipsight, the author of the new novel, Hark, because he's doing what it's very hard to do. He's actually written a novel that in certain ways reflects our times, has found a technique for reflecting our times, and is not cheating while doing this. You haven't given a backdoor reading that is the correct reading, you've really made a book that is meant to cause everyone to pull on their beards and say, I wonder. Now tell me, what did you want this book to do?
Well, I wanted it to do a few things. I wanted it to, and I started it, in 2012, so a lot of these ideas were gathering for some time. And I wanted to write a book that both reflected some of the issues or ideas that we were just talking about, especially I'm always kind of interested in questions of class and the climate stuff and just kind of everyday struggle of characters who are kind of very self-aware and trying to make sense of the world and their blind spots. So that's part of it. I wanted to write a broader, funnier kind of book than maybe my last one. I wanted to engage with a lot of characters, have a bigger scope, but I didn't want to lose the fine grain strangeness that I think some of my other work has always been engaged with. So I was trying to juggle things. And then I was taking this kind of strange leap where I was kind of entering into absurdity, and I was entering into, I wasn't, as you said, there's no back door out. I wanted to, and without giving too much away, like Hark is a character who, as you say, maybe more than even people are saying he is, and maybe existing on a different plane. And so I want to take a chance and write a book where I left that open instead of with certainty closing the door on those possibilities.
It is therefore, I think, not giving things away to say that within the last 5 pages of the book, we discovered that there are people who believe that Hark is the Son of God.
Absolutely.
And Hark...
And there may even be evidence of that.
There may be evidence of that. Hark isn't going to dissuade them, but as soon as we enter this jaw-dropping supposition, the thing that immediately follows is, what kind of God would have Hark as a son?
Yeah.
This isn't, what God is this? Is this the God of capitalism? Is this the God, this isn't the Christian God? Is this the Hebrew God? This isn't the Hebrew God. This isn't the Muslim God. This isn't the God of the Quran. This is, you see?
This is the Facebook God.
This is, yes, well, that's what I want to say, that this God doesn't know how to raise a child in the same way that we all don't know anymore.
Bad parenting.
I mean, this is wild concept for a novel, that even the child of God has not been parented well enough.
Not well enough, no.
Yes. Now, how conscious were you of that?
Well, I was conscious. The movement of Hark's interior in the book is that he, as we were saying before, he kind of is making it up as he goes along and taking lines from other people and incorporating them into his cant. But he's also has intimations earlier in the book that he is not just some guy, that there may be more to it. But I think the idea of the book is, like, as this movement grows, it's a revelation to him. He has a revelation about who he is. So he doesn't know really if he is this, but he doesn't really know who he might be at the beginning. It becomes clearer to him anyway by the end.
Just as he's making it up as he goes along, I would say this is the book in which you're making it up more than in any other as you go along. And every, 20 pages or so, a new character appears with a new kind of crazy idea that has to be entertained because it's a potential explanation for this. But no one, you see, this book is going to drive a certain kind of reader crazy. It's a book that I loved because I love books where characters speak with outlandish vocabularies yes. and speak in bizarre paragraphs about what they think, have discussions that make no sense. And The Magic Mountain, by the way, is a book like that.
Yeah.
They're all discussing their ideas about health and the future.
Absolutely.
And why they're there at this institute. Well,
the novels I like and aspire to are usually... whatever is happening, it's an excuse for these digressions, these arias, these conversations, these monologues, and then other modes of description. But yes, it's a book that's not necessarily concerned with one tight clockwork kind of mechanism.
Now tell me, the one tight clockwork mechanism novel, can it be written anymore?
I suppose it can, although it's like building a pocket watch, making a pocket watch. It's a wonderful device. Is it what we need right now?
Gary Steingart has a character in his new novel who collects
watches.
Jeweled timepieces yeah. that are perfect, and they are models for certain kinds of novels. They work because they've been built to work, and when they stop telling the time, there's no purpose for them anymore.
One thing I've heard, though, I don't know if this is true, but someone told me that those really expensive, really beautifully crafted jeweled watches actually don't tell time as well as, you know, a Timex.
I would imagine that sometimes that's true.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, I grew up under the influence of the eyes of a writer who built a better time clock watch than any other in his time. That was John Barth.
Yes.
He was a genius.
Absolutely.
At constructing books that would work up to three quarters of the way through, and then in the last quarter, they absolutely give up the ability to tell time correctly. It's absolutely thrilling.
Yeah.
I loved him, and no one is writing books like that anymore. I think even if, as brilliant as he was, if a book like that were to appear to an editor wouldn't know how to convince the publishing house how to publish it.
I think you could say that for a lot of great writers from the past. It's true.
It breaks my heart because when I think of the past, you know, we say the past, we say Dickens, we say Chaucer, we say Cervantes. The past, this is my past. This is 1969 when I got to college
yeah.
and John Barth was writing, and it's not the far past. It was the past that I can remember vibrantly, vividly, and John Barth was the most
exciting.
Or what
exciting. About William Gaddis or something like that?
William Gaddis, William yeah. Gass, your man John Hawkes, John Robert Coover. Theory moved in, announced the impossibility of knowledge, and made the novel, the timepiece novel, much harder to write. This book, Hark, is the consequence of theory, where everything that can be said in the novel can be disproven within a couple of pages. Now, for many people, this is a kind of comedy. It is for me. But for other people, it really is. You mean nothing is true? You mean we can't rely on anything? We can't even rely on a simple young man from the sticks, the man from the provinces, coming to the city and saving the works? And this book says, hark, no.
Well, I think it's a book against certainty. And that's one of the themes for me. And I think that if you can make peace with uncertainty, then you can actually begin to enjoy on some level the complexities of life, and there are things that have real meaning, and they have to do with our relationships, and they have to do with the ways we're connected to each other, and the ways we connect to art and politics, and I think that if we can do away with the more simplistic and perhaps comforting but ultimately stultifying ideas about what our reality is, we're better off. And so maybe that makes Hark a post-theory book, or and maybe I'm a, you know, just a casualty of the post-theory world, but that's where I am with it.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Sam Lipsight about his novel Hark, which is published by Simon & Schuster. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Sam Lipsight about his novel, Hark. A satirical, but the question is how satirical, send-up, but is it really a send-up, of contemporary culture, featuring an unwitting mindfulness guru who initiates spectacular phenomenon, or initiates spectacular disappointments, because the things that people have come to believe in him for and rely on him for, almost everyone who meets him, who hears a lecture, says afterwards, he really did change the way I think. He changed my life. I really owe something to him. And yet we don't have enough evidence about the speakers who say this to be able to tell why it is that such simple dynamics are making their lives improved.
Well, it might be a placebo effect. That's one part of it. But I don't even want to give a specific reading. I think that I'm also interested in ideas about belief, ideas about what we think is happening to us versus what is happening to us. And so with some of these characters, they can hold these two ideas at once. One is, this can't be real. I'm not sure I believe in this. I'm a rational person. This might be an interesting practice to help me focus, but it's not more. And yet there's this yearning to believe in something more. And I think that's the tension in the book and the tension, the internal struggle for some of these characters. You know, one character says, you know, I was raised by atheist parents, but I want this.
Well, one of the other struggles in a book that is just full of tensions is that husbands and wives do not get along too well in this book. Children and parents are set at each other's throats. Even Hark, as a teacher, messiah, guru figure, prefers during most of the book to stay outside sexual relationships.
Yes.
And when one threatens, there are too many possibilities of buying the person who loves him for a price. So that love now has a price tag on it and doesn't work the way we thought it might in the love at first sight discourse.
Right.
I very much found that I liked the absence of easy answers in this book. I preferred it to the mountains of failure that were implied by some of the previous books. For instance, one of Sam Lipsight's previous book, I think Homeland, won
the Believer Book Award.
The Believer Book Award. Readers of The Believer voted on their favorite book, and they chose that one. I was very surprised when they chose that, because the hero of that book is living, plotting dire conspiracies against his high school, the get-together of the high school and the high school prom. And if there's ever anything that I wish Americans didn't spend so long, high school is over. Let's stop thinking about it and move on to more important things. But that book, Homeland...
Well, I think Homeland was about that problem.
Yes. But it dealt with it so obsessively that it got my goat.
Okay. You know, fair enough.
Hark, I guess I enjoyed it because it didn't seem to me that there were either easy answers or obvious answers. This is the fix that we're all of us in. Finding a job that can be inspiring without becoming overwhelmingly dull. Finding a marriage, even, it uses the word bind a lot, binding with one's children. Or even one set of children are twins, and they have insight into one another, which only means that the fights between these twins can be more hilarious and more vicious because each of them knows what the other is thinking.
It's like fighting with yourself almost.
or fighting with yourself, but the other self has a way of turning up the volume.
Yeah.
I was very happy to be reading a book that managed to be this needful for a solution and this nuts in its despair of finding one. So I wanted to thank you for Hark, Sam Lipsyte.
Well, thank you.
It was a lot of fun. I've been talking with Sam Lipsyte, author of Hark, published by Simon & Schuster. I hope that you're working on another novel.
Well, as soon as this interview is over, I'll get started.
You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, you can listen on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer and assistant, Sean Sullivan. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz, and I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she's a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she's a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Dennis Cooper and Zach Farley are our guests.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.